and the bass keeps running, running. Oh man!
In this context, the Earth is dead.
Before we started recording, hi everybody, welcome to the Wolverine Patrol. Before we started recording, we were talking about how we're in weirdly good spirits given today's topic of climate change. So let's get extincted in here. Welcome to the campsite, everybody. I'm Tim. We got Liz back with us today for another episode.
Yeah, doing round two.
Yeah, we're recording two first today because I'm going to be...
Shh, you can't tell them the magic.
Oh, I can't tell them the magic?
Oh, that's behind the
we exist on a plane outside of space and time.
Yeah.
I don't know where we are, neither do we.
Yeah, dude, podcasters just exist. They exist in a state of constant awakening, like Tralfamadorians from fucking Slaughterhouse-Five. Like, perceive everything.
I was thinking they're more like Cenobites from Hellraiser, as in like we're all like a bunch of sadists addicted to pain.
Well, there's that too.
Yeah,
there's that too.
Yeah,
As always, I'm we're here with Liz. He's all we can't ruin the magic, and I'm like, are you telling me our listeners don't want to hear about my colonoscopy prep?
Okay, so never mind. Don't check out our behind the scenes TikTok channel.
Yeah, it's just gonna be me shitting a lot.
Very behind the scenes.
Yeah. There's some behinds, all right. But as always, I'm here with our co-hosts Jack and John, and our producer Ron on the ones and twos. Our producer Juan on the
Ron. Our producer Juan.
Juan on the Rons and twos. Yeah. There's been way too much laughing for an episode about planet death.
How else are we gonna fucking get through it, man?
Yeah, dude, that explains why Zoomers are so fucking funny, honestly. There's very blackpilled about the whole thing. But yeah, that's kind of our topic today. Climate change, impending doom, or at least impending, not even impending stuff, you know? It's
happening.
Yeah,
now,
literally.
Right now. Yeah, literally.
The West Coast,
Australia, 9 months ago.
Burned to the fucking ground. Hurricane destroying New York. The coasts are going to be bye-bye, honey. Bye.
You're out of here.
Loser. You're out of here, loser. Bye. Yeah.
California, it's terrible. We're going to get rid of all of it.
Wouldn't Trump love to be able to wipe out all the New York stems?
So. Yeah, that's, well, maybe. Yeah, all the people who are looking into
that. Hang on. This is a fraud. Theory. Trump can whip up hurricanes and he rides them into destroy.
He's fucking Storm from X-Men.
Yes.
But way worse.
Yes.
Oh, the boys.
From the boys.
Yeah.
I'm very excited for when we eventually talk about the boys because it's absolutely coming.
Well, hey, let's hear it for the boys.
Hey,
let's hear it for the boys!
Man, we are so honored to be Ohio's number one pop culture and climate change podcast. So climate change, it's here, it's real. Is anybody, if you're questioning whether or not it's real, I don't really know what to tell you at this point. How did you find this podcast? Please, Grandma, please go back to Facebook. I'm so sorry. Just kidding. My grandma's dead.
I mean, coming hot off the last episode, though, like the whole anti-truth conspiracy theories, like, you know, that's another one. Climate change is just it's a hoax.
It's a hoax.
Yes. It's a conspiracy.
It's fake. Dude.
It's fake.
It's like, fake news, baby.
Fake news. Yep.
Fake news,
Freedom.eagle says so.
Yeah,
how
boy.
Very convenient, or as Al Gore would say,
inconvenient. Wow, that was a really good segue.
Oh,
that was actually where I was wanting to go with it.
How do you like that?
Climate change is clearly something that the elites and scientific institutions have known about since, I don't know, the fucking 50s probably or before.
Oh, yeah.
At least maybe the early 20th century.
You can observe it back in the Industrial Revolution in England when you have these moths that could like blend into the bark on the tree, and then they all died out because once the Industrial Revolution hit, the trees and forests were so covered in soot that they no longer blended into like the white birch type
environment.
So they got predated. Animals started eating them a lot easier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that, you know, that's the price of progress, baby.
Yeah,
man, I think about those soot moths a lot.
Yeah.
I think about those soot moths all the time. I immediately thought, I was like, yeah, dude, because they have to get, like, darker to adapt.
Soot moth sounds like a racial slur that hasn't been used since, like, 1935.
I was thinking it sounded like a stoner metal band, like soot Sleep moth. Or something. Yeah. Like, one of those bands that, like, has a 20-minute song that's just... Dun, dun,
Their like logo is totally illegible.
Yeah.
I think that's great now, just some old time guys like a lot of soot moss, if you know what I mean. I'm like, I literally have no idea what you mean.
I have no idea what that
means. You have no idea what you mean. But yeah, it's definitely something we've known about for a long time and done fuck all about and made worse. And it's coming home to roost in a way that our system is, you're not going to believe it, completely unqualified to deal with.
Mm-hmm. We're unequipped to deal with it.
Absolutely. So let's I guess this could be another, you know, I always love opening with a little round table here. Where was the place in your, like, I guess in your own life where, like, you first realized, like, it kind of entered the cultural lexicon and you were like, oh, no. Oh, this is a thing. Because for me, it was probably, like, in late high school, early college when Inconvenient Truth came out. I don't know, when was it for you guys? Was it Inconvenient Truth or was it something else? Was there something else where you went, oh, no, oh, this is real bad?
I think my big, like, awakening moment was probably during Hurricane Katrina. As far as, like, eye-opening in the sense that I'm like, oh, my God, we are not fucking prepared to deal with, like, a national, like, weather catastrophe at all.
And that was, like, around the same time, too, that you have, like, all the Roland Emmerich movies coming out.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Day After Tomorrow.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
And then later, 2012. And
yeah, you're absolutely right. That was, we definitely started seeing more disaster movies. Because I think, like, even though, like, you know, maybe it was pre-Inconvenient Truth or whatever, we definitely got to this point as a society where I think we knew, like, oh no, hurricanes aren't supposed to be that bad or that frequent. Oh, those tornadoes are getting worse. Those fires are getting worse. Oh no. Oh, and I think, like, even if we didn't yet, like, even if it wasn't being talked about, like, in the real, like, it wasn't being talked about so much in debates, it wasn't being talked about so much on the news, I think, like, that anxiety was starting to really rear its ugly head even then. And that's certainly when I first really thought about it. And I don't know, Jack, you've been in tune for a long time with various things. When were you like, oh God, that was...
So this is actually an interesting topic for me because I actually entered my adult life as, like, a global warming skeptic, right? And the reason for that was I was brought up in a very, like, conservative Christian, like, Fox News type of household.
Sure.
Right? And when An Inconvenient Truth came out, there was another movie that came out that was, again, a movie that you had to find on the internet that was called The Great Global Warming Swindle. And it was like this rightist counterpoint to An Inconvenient Truth that kind of was like, well, if global warming is so bad, well, how about the medieval thermal maximum? There were grapevines in the north of England and people were just fine then, don't you know? Don't you know that the earth has natural climate swings?
Yeah.
You know, also, and it was like that. It was an hour and a half long documentary. Oh, yeah. It was very professional. It was very well put together. And it seemed to have a good, like, database. And this was before I had taken college level science courses and been taught how to read data and how to, like, understand scientific studies. And I think that after I took real science classes in college was when I sort of, like, started to actually be able to look at the source data and not just, like, take these, like, biased political viewpoints of, like, people that were interpreting the data, but actually being able to look at the studies and be like,
yeah,
guys, these p-values are fucking off the charts. Like,
right.
Yeah.
This is not good.
Right. Yeah. And it's the thing. I think we've been aware of it for a long time, but, like, it was not an easy concept for us to really grasp before a certain point, I think. Like, you're right. Like, I think there really was a time that in the kind of cultural dialogue, it was all charts and graphs. It was all numbers. It was all this. It wasn't people going, hey, look at these fucking fires burning Australia to the ground, you know?
So I actually have I know exactly the first time I found out about global warming. I think I was in 7th or 8th grade, and we learned about it, and they were talking about it in science class.
Yeah.
And I just have a very specific memory of my dad picking me up and going, oh, what'd you do in school today? I was like, eh, no, not much. He was like, we did science. Like, we talked about global warming. He was like, well, did they tell you how it's, like, mostly all fake? And I was just like, my immediate thought was like, you had to get dentures when you were, like, 22. I'm done taking class.
You said your dad picked you up. I legitimately just, like,
just like, you're, like, 14 years old.
Yeah, you know, carrying, like my fucking chubby 14.
Lifted
he
him
was
off
bald
the
back then, too, if you believe it. You know. Just looked like Louis Anderson's, like, little cartoon version of himself from that old 90s cartoon when I was a kid, like, when I was in 8th grade, so, you know, it could be worse, I guess.
When I picture you in 8th grade, I always picture you in a Slipknot beanie.
Yeah, dude, I have a Slipknot beanie.
Oh,
and it was a cool beanie that everyone thought was really cool.
I remember, like, yeah, you and, like, Matt, I don't want to say, like,
yeah, name, don't say last don't names say, on this fucking show.
I wasn't going to, but he was in our Boy Scout troop as well. And, like, didn't, like, his dad take you guys to go see that?
No, my mom took us.
Oh, that's...
Yeah, my mom funnier. Took me to see Slipknot.
My little Irish Catholic mom.
They check at the door. If your mom did not bring you to a Slipknot concert, you can't get in. They don't.
I'd like to take this moment to personally thank the internet for bringing us the Fred Durst versus Slipknot beef of the early 2000s.
We watched a video about that the other day on the old fan sites. And
they're just like patting you down at the show like they do. And they're just like, what are these? Car keys? These yours? You drive here?
God, this episode's going to clip so fucking much. Yeah. Jesus Christ.
As you can tell,
and it's fucking dying. Yeah. We're laughing about me going to see Slipknot with my mom.
Yes. We're all very uncomfortable talking about this.
I think this just explains Zoomers.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
I'm starting to get the mentality the longer I stay in quarantine.
Yeah, I totally get it, man. They're very black-pilled individuals, and I don't blame them for it.
Especially when you realize that, like, the scientific data points toward the fact that pandemic diseases that cross over to humans from animals are going to get more common as the planet heats up and as resources dwindle and humans come into, as biodiversity is lost, right? That gives viruses a smaller set of genes to replicate to, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so that means that as biodiversity is lost, you're going to continue to see more and more viruses that are able to quickly mutate and jump from species to species, because that's how the viruses are going to have to survive, because they are not going to have as many hosts the more that species die off. And so you're going to see these pandemics continue to increase and get worse. And, like, this is the very first one that really has shattered people's worlds. And when you tell them, not only is this not going away, but something much worse than this is likely to happen within our lifetime.
Oh, also, good. It can be heavily tied into climate change.
It can be. It's not climate change per se, but it's industrial capitalism.
It's the destruction of environments that leads to, like, this narrow gene pool all of a sudden.
Yeah, species that are going extinct and... Exactly what Jack was saying, that you get these diseases and these viruses that are able to jump from species to species now.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. So thank God it's all a hoax. I think that's really what I'm saying.
Well, but to understand that, there it takes a certain level of scientific literacy that people are intentionally not given in public school.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, you have to either indebt yourself to go to college to learn how to read science and understand why these things would happen, because it's very easy if you're not scientifically literate to listen to people saying incredibly alarming things like I just said and just be like, yeah, I don't think that's true.
Well, like, it also doesn't help that, you know, blowhards like fucking Al Gore, like, load their documentaries with a bunch of, like, jargon that, like, the common folk wouldn't, like, relate to, you know? So that certainly doesn't help.
All I could think, God, I'm such a fucking millennial, when you said blowhards like Al Gore, there is an old episode of Pinky and the Brain that is a parody of Winnie the Pooh, and Eeyore the donkey is called Al Gore the donkey, and he literally just never stops talking
that
in, like, a constant
so
drone.
Accurate.
And he is full of hot air, and they, like, use him like a balloon to fly. And he never stops talking. Like, the entire time he's on screen is just, like, one long drone.
Well, that reminds me. There's the South Park episode with Al Gore and the
Man-Bear Pig.
I pointed this out on Facebook a while back that, I mean, according to that, that was them basically saying that they thought global warming was bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
Because Man-Bear-Pig only existed in Imagination Land, which meant that it was fake.
Right.
And they literally, like, Matt and Trey, like, literally came out and they're like, they did the whole episode about this. Where they were like, yeah, we were wrong. Like, you guys were right. And I pointed that out and I was like, how come nobody ever talks about how, like, Matt and Trey Parker, like, made an anti, like, global warming, like, science episode? And, like, all these comedians lost their shit on
What's me. So fucking funny about that episode, too, is, like, they're like, they'll admit, it's like, okay, so we were wrong about Man-Bear-Pig. Man-Bear-Pig is very real. However, Al Gore is still an insufferable piece of shit. Yeah. Like,
and I think that's a really good segue into what, you know, Ron discusses and has been, you know, saying for a long time about Inconvenient Truth, where, like, it's fair to assume that one man and one production cannot cover the entire very dense issue of global warming in you know, an hour and a half or 2 hours, but there are definitely some questions as to what he picked and chose to discuss, and based on industries he has ties to. He really didn't talk about livestock and how that's killing the planet very much, I guess, and that is something I believe the Gores, or at least that part of the country that he once represented, have, like, a heavy interest in.
You haven't thought of the methane, Al. Think of the methane gas!
Think of the methane gas. No, talk about hot air.
Well, yeah. I do the vegetarian thing, and the reason was is because I had read so much where they're talking about how, when it comes to global warming on a larger scale, yes, it's on corporations. It's on, this is, sure, you know, that thing. But the answer always came back. There's one thing that a person can do to have the most impact to help curb. What is it? And every single scientist said, either stop eating meat or cut back on it.
Yes,
and then I had a climate scientist tell me that to my face. Mm-hmm. And I was like, all right, I can't, you know what I mean? Like, that's...
Right. And that's the thing. Like, it's, the meat is such a funny thing because not only, like, yeah, it is killing the planet, but also, like, humans were never designed to eat as much meat as we eat.
Oh, yeah.
No.
You had to catch it and kill it yourself. How much do you think you were getting?
This is why our low-impact toilets aren't working. Like, this is why Donald Trump is mad at them, because they won't flush those big, big meat, dookies, man. Those big, big meaty big shits, dude. Shits.
Well, yeah. Like, to Ron's point, I have, I decided that, like, I was going to try my hand at raising livestock on my own. I have, like, 2.5 acres, right? And so I've tried to raise livestock as a way to personally eat meat without engaging in the corporate, you know, like, sure, meat production thing.
Well,
and let me
animals?
Tell you how fucking hard it is to catch a chicken after it's watched you kill another chicken. Like, it has takes me, like, 4 hours to kill 3 chickens, because you have to chase them around the yard and try and catch them, and it's not easy to do, right?
Well, clearly the solution to this is just kill them in a secret room. Keep it out of the public eye. Oh, yeah, you know, right. Chicken black side.
Take them down to the...
have your own slaughter plant on your 2 acres.
You gotta take them down to the river. Tell them that you're gonna let them tend to them rabbits, Georgie.
Just the boat, just the boat scene from Godfather. Just a boat in the middle of the lake. Go ahead, Jackson.
It was exactly like that.
We are truly once again humbled and honored to be named Ohio's number one livestock lifestyle and advice podcast.
Welcome to Ohio's number one agriculture and farming podcast.
Global warming's fake.
DJ Dirty Balls.
But, like, to be honest, like, most people do not want to have to put in the amount of effort that it takes to raise their own food, right?
Yeah. Sure.
Yeah. And they insist on eating this diet of meat that makes it so that there is a shortage of food when there doesn't have to be.
Right.
Because it's something crazy, like 80% of the arable land in the United States that is currently farmed is farmed to produce grain that is then fed to cows.
Right. Yeah.
Right? 80%. Like, if we used that to grow vegetables for people instead of grain for cows, there would never be a shortage of food for people ever again, worldwide.
Yeah. Yeah, and we could even, like, our population could, like, grow, and we would still have the... Even now, we make so much more food than people eat because we throw it away because that's what the market dictates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, perfectly good food and garbage bins.
Yeah, and I mean, you don't have to think high concepts here on a global scale to see what we're talking about. Go to your local fucking Kroger and see what they throw away at the end of it.
Okay. Yo,
there's
dude,
this program
yeah.
that my wife wanted to sign us up for where it's like $15 a month and they give you like the ugly
produce. Oh, imperfect.
Yeah. They'll send you the fruits and vegetables that aren't as good looking, so they're gonna get thrown
out. Yeah.
So, and that was just like, wow. I mean, you have this business that's coming directly from
Just our wastefulness.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And our just insane, shallow consumerism.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we even had a thing where we would do, and you come into like, the reason so much of that get thrown away is because there's all these weird laws in a lot of places that like you can't donate it.
Oh, it's
when,
true.
It when we true, were yeah. on, when you would, you know, the film sets, catering, I mean, it's just like gigantic smorgasbord after smorgasbord every day. And everybody would eat and there would still be like an ungodly amount of food left. And they were like, we tried to donate it. They're like, we have to throw it all away. Like, jeez. We, like, legally, we have to throw it all away. I'm like, Jesus, fuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, anybody, I used to work, you know, for Meijer, and, like, yeah, anybody who's ever worked in, like, a box store will, like, immediately recognize the wastefulness that just takes place on a daily basis.
Yeah.
Just, like, whole ass, like, loaves of, like, bread, and, like, the bakery stuff was always what's wild to me, is because, like, it'd be perfectly fine. You know, it's not moldy, you know, it's not even stale. It's
yeah, like, Panera and the Atlantic Bread Company would, like, donate their... like day old food to different organizations, which was pretty cool.
Sure.
But then it's just like, why aren't every yeah. single store needs to be doing
But then
this?
The question is even, and you know, maybe one of you guys can speak to this more, even if every company, every private company did that, could we, can we capital, in a capitalist, like, can we donate our way out of climate crisis?
No.
Like,
no.
No. And that becomes the issue, and that becomes the question of like, it is cool that like, you know, it's not just being thrown in the garbage, I guess, but like at the end of the day, like I'm sorry, the Panera giving their bagels still doesn't deal with the fact that most of the food we grow is for fucking hamburgers.
Well, and it also just doesn't change the fact that we create, like, not to be all like we live in a society, but we create a society that allows people to like beg for scraps, essentially. It's like, yeah. Oh, well, we might give them like our old, you know, like crusty, I don't know.
Stuff. Right. I mean, that becomes the whole question of like, you know, even like the fact that like they even have to do that in the first place.
Exactly.
Is the bigger issue of sustainability and whether markets can provide for people. And
well, but if you're talking about climate change too, you have to look at the way that the distribution networks encourage wasteful behavior in terms of fossil fuels, right? Yeah. The way that most food is not local, and the local food movement that like you hear about like Kroger engaging in and stuff, it's such a small percentage of food because that it, you simply cannot have everything all the time and have local food.
No.
Period.
No.
So we'll instead, stop. We have oranges that are grown in Peru that are shipped to Thailand to get packaged into plastic cups that are then shipped back to the United States where those plastic cups go into landfills.
Right, because that's logistically just the best,
but
right?
But it's profitable because labor is cheap in those places.
Exactly.
Right. Right? That's and when you have a profit motive as opposed to a resource distribution motive, you see these things that from the outside are just totally fucking insane, and then you realize that every single one of these behaviors is prompted because they want to make money.
Right. And this becomes, I think, the logical place to go with that is that the system is completely unable to deal with this because the most they can offer is market solutions and things that don't inherently fundamentally change the way our economy works, but maybe just tweak it so it's a little bit less destructive at most. And that becomes an issue in that, like, I mean, the inherent thing where, like, you know, trying to fit retrofit market solutions into, like, basic needs is fucked. I don't think I need to tell anybody in this room in that regards to healthcare or anything else. But, like, yeah, just the idea that, like, I think the best we could ever hope from the libs, not even, like, the conservatives who just want to outright deny it or say, well, fuck it, who cares, as long as we're the only country that survives. The libs really want to believe that, like, there is going to be a retrofitted market solution to this catastrophic, like, apocalyptic issue.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way that they, like, tried to convince us that, like, the Affordable Care Act would, like, fix healthcare because it would bring the market around in a way that, you know, made it possible to provide for the need. It was absurd, you know?
Well, I'd also like to say, to add to your point, Tim, like, look no further than, like, how profitable, like, quote-unquote green or quote-unquote organic products have become. That itself has become a market.
Right.
You know, like...
Right, that again, like, physically... That's not going to save us from climate catastrophe.
No.
Well, and it's important to point out that the way that capitalism works, markets are not created in the way that they teach you in economics school that they're created, right? It's not this like pure system of independent actors that are all empowered to exchange these things in this marketplace that's, you know, anybody can make it. Markets are conquered.
Right.
Markets are broken into and extracted by capital.
Yeah.
Right? And Marx understood this from studying the way that capitalism came up, even in, you know, even if you look back at when capitalism was first starting in England, right? These same kinds of things were happening. There are quotes from people of the time who say that that the fields were full of sheep that had eaten men. And what they meant was that the land in England was being fenced off because wool exports were very profitable at that time. Textiles were,
sure.
Right? That's where a lot of the money was. And that textiles and clothing, which at one point was something that took up a lot of people's time to make your own clothes, sure. And textiles, like that was one of the first markets that was capitalized on by the new capitalists, the very first ones. Right. And you saw land that people had been using for foraging and hunting and small farming for forever, for, you know, hundreds and hundreds of years, was fenced off. Those people were kicked off that land at sword point. And they were forced to flee to the large cities because these landowners would literally hire armed gangs of thugs to go around, burn down their villages, and kick them off into the cities. Mm-hmm. And that was how capitalism first came up.
Yeah, through force. Which is
that is how a market is created.
Right. John, you can jump in.
So, where you're talking about how these big pieces of land are being fenced off for farming purposes, where people used to hunt and forage and things like that. These forests are getting burned down or torn down, and then nowadays, because there's so much carbon in the environment, these forests aren't around, like especially in the Amazon in South America.
Oh boy.
In Southeast Asia in the jungles, these huge swaths of rainforests are getting torn down, and that used to help that planet regulate that carbon, so that's another fucking cause of the climate change.
Yeah, and like, and especially now in like Brazil and like areas where like the far right has like full like autocratic control of these countries, more or less.
Even thanks to the beef industry.
Yeah.
And their support of those candidates.
Yeah, and American companies.
Yeah.
You know, I just, I frequently can't grapple with the fact that the tip of the sword of the apocalypse is Jair Bolsonaro, a man who once asked, "What is a golden shower?" on Twitter. That's the guy that's going to get us all killed.
He's such a goon. I hate his ass so much.
Yeah, didn't he get coronavirus twice?
Yeah.
God damn it.
And survived both times. Dude's rock, man.
Nevertheless, dudes persisted rocking.
Yeah.
Also, Jackie brought up the textile industry, like the early textile industries. I'd like to say that nothing bad ever happened from that. Not the Triangle Shirt Fire, nothing
none of those things
ever bad happened from that.
Oh man, we could do a whole fucking separate podcast just about all the just directly brutal things capitalists have done.
Yeah.
And that is what happens when you try to take a fundamental human need and make it into a market. Like clothes. Clothes are a human fucking need.
Yeah.
Yes.
There are very few places in this earth that you can live without clothes.
Yeah.
Okay? And so textile fires happen in Bangladesh. They don't happen here. And the reason for that is market-based solutions in the capitalist core turn into a directly inversely cruel labor practices abroad to support those markets in the West.
Right, the brutality of capitalism, you know, nothing is funnier to me than the idea that like, oh, capitalism was brutal, like in the Industrial Revolution, and then it reformed and got better. No, it didn't, we just pushed it somewhere else, or onto other people. You know, even when, you know, we finally got like some unions and some you know, child labor laws and things here, we just pushed it onto like, Black people in, you know, the cities or whoever was left. We just pushed it like onto, you know, other countries in our immediate purview and other populations within our country, but then eventually just abroad to other people.
Right, because those needs have to remain accessible to people, because otherwise people will riot to get them.
Right.
Right. And in order to make them cheap enough and also profitable enough to be both accessible to people and profitable, you have to be fucking somebody over really, really badly. And those people are today in Bangladesh, Thailand, Laos, where these atrocious fucking sweatshops are making basically all of our clothes.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the tags on your clothes. Where are they made?
Yeah. Yeah. It's brutal, and it's
and again, we're taking cotton. Cotton doesn't fucking grow in Bangladesh, okay? Right. Like, we're taking cotton that is grown halfway around the world, shipping it over there to make clothes, to ship them back here. How much fossil fuel does that take?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because I've been pontificating since we recorded that first episode today about QAnon and how climate change is going to bleed over into every aspect of our lives and every political aspect of our lives. And it already is, and much more very soon. A lot of what the far right's function in our society is at the moment is kind of the in my opinion, the capitalist worlds and the capitalist elites' weather balloon for what they can get away with. As far as, like, are people going to be low-key okay with people getting killed as long as it's not them? Because that, man, oh no, you know, we burned Africa to the ground. Sorry. Like, will they be able to get away with that at some point? Because make no mistake, that's coming. So as resources, and, you know, again, better political podcasts, whatever, have made this point, as resources become more scarce and as we really hit that tipping point, and it is coming very soon, our solutions become fundamentally changed the way our economies and commerce and everything about, like, the way our societies get goods has to change, like, fundamentally, globally, or we have to, like, kill half the world's population. And, like, those are the two options.
I don't even think that depopulating the Earth would necessarily solve anything. No, it wouldn't solve the problem.
But that is going to be the pitch.
Yeah, that's going to be the pitch. Absolutely. Mass death is going to be the pitch.
And it's
sure.
kind of, you know, it's where even it fucks me up that, like, I feel like I would love your guys' takes on this. So I don't think people realize, especially with impending climate catastrophe, even, like, well-meaning, like, libs or whatever, that, like, when they talk about overpopulation, that is what they are supporting. The problem isn't that there are too many people to feed. Yeah. The problem is we don't feed them.
Yeah. And that, it's not profitable to feed them.
No, it's not. And so when people get on their shit about, like, this Malthusian, like, oh, we need to thin the herd, like, do they not realize they're talking about, like, climate genocide? They don't, I don't think. But I don't know. What do you guys... What are your feels on that?
I don't think they're knowingly and purposely advocating for genocide.
Right. Well, it's certainly not, yeah.
Right, but they are pushing that narrative along so that the fucked up people who would actually advocate for that get more fuel, thinking that it's a lot more of a popular concept than I guess it should be. I don't know.
For sure.
I don't know.
Libs really like to, with the whole overpopulation thing, I think, like, a lot of times you'll see, like, libs be like, oh, well, stupid people shouldn't breed, or, like, you know, like, they'll, like, make, like, things like that. And, right. like, I don't think they're ever really opposed to, like, maybe culling the herd a bit.
No. And here's the quiet part they don't say loud when they say stupid people shouldn't breed. They actually mean uneducated people, aka poor people. And they're not just talking about the domestic poor, they're talking about the global third world poor.
Oh, yeah. Poor. And, like, when I'm glad that you used the word Malthusian. Like, Malthus was the end of the 16th, beginning, or end of the 17th, beginning of the 18th century.
Yeah.
Like, and Malthus was a British imperial philosopher, right?
Sure.
The whole idea is a fundamentally white supremacist idea, and it was from the outset, that we need to depopulate black and brown parts of the world to make room for our great march of civilization.
Our fucking Lebensraum,
right?
Man.
And it's like, no, he recognized that the British way of living required more resources than Britain would produce.
Yeah, certainly.
And so if they were going to continue to expand that somebody was going to have to go. And he's not wrong about that, we've seen.
No, and I mean, it's evil to just say, like, that should just happen. But, like, I mean, that is the quiet implication of it all.
It is. And right. I talk to my lib friends about this. Like, when I start talking about lefty ideas to my lib friends, and they start talking about, like, Bernie Sanders type solutions, like Sock Dem solutions to things, and I'm just like, even if that would improve conditions for people here, that has to make conditions for people somewhere else worse. And their reaction is without fail, it's, well, we can't control what happens over there. All we can do is try and control what happens here.
We do control what happens over there. Our capitalist elite own those fucking countries and all of their resources.
Yeah. Like, we have guns literally pointed at people from like 20 miles away on our military base.
Yeah, that's always the thing that tells me, like, Coca-Cola and Nestle basically fucking own the entire continent of Africa and their resources, and De Beers diamonds, and so, like, the idea that, like, we can't control what happens over there, motherfucker, that is all we do.
Yeah. And you benefit from it, but what they don't want to talk about is the way that they personally benefit from that fact.
Right. And I mean, the question, I guess that becomes kind of the next lead into it, is like, they do. We do. We are sitting here in a, you know, in a home in that part of the world that has air conditioning and lights and a place where you can turn on, you know, get water, and we can get cheap products, and I can go to Walmart. So what can we as individuals do about it, if anything? That becomes the question.
It's the old, I see you don't like society, and yet you partake in it.
Yet you conundrum. Live in a society.
Yeah, conundrum.
I am very intelligent.
I am very intelligent.
I love that comic. God, yeah. It's classic. So, I mean, I guess what the question is, like, what in the short term can be done? I mean, we can raise awareness.
Runs into the issue we talked about on the last episode.
Sure.
Where you can try to educate people. And we have, and we failed, and they've proven again and again and again, they're not going to listen because they don't give a fucking shit.
Or they just, they have some inherent hang-up where they can't believe what you're saying.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And that we're always going to run into that. And I don't know if it's just, it's going to have to get so bad that people have no choice, but like, I feel like people always have a choice. And that's what gets hard.
Yeah. Well, and like, there was, so like, when we were like about 10 or 11 years old, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right around the turn of the century, were people who asked that question, what can I do? And the answer was the ELF and the ALF, which were eco-terrorist organizations. They were decentralized eco-terrorist organizations that encouraged people to go out and blow up pipelines and break cattle free and damage factories and do whatever, because the idea was, well, if you as an individual choose to attack the system directly, the system is not prepared for that. And we have to attack these choke points in order to make it so that capitalism will grind to a halt, period. We have to bring the system to a halt, or it's going to continue to destroy the planet and we're all going to die, right?
Right.
And that ELF, ALF was so dangerous to the status quo that the United States government cracked down on them so hard. It's called the Green Scare.
Yeah.
And you can look this up on the internet. The entire security apparatus of the United States was focused on eradicating these people for the better part of 10 years during the Bush era and all the way up into the Obama era. These people were being prosecuted simply for, like, talking about these things, right?
Right.
And there are a lot of political prisoners in prison today that were a part of that movement that did not actually commit any bombings or any crimes, but just were a part. They were accused of being anarchists or collaborators, and they were taken down under RICO laws.
RICO fucking laws.
Yeah,
you're
shitting me. Yeah, no, yeah,
they couldn't even go after the Catholic Church and the priests who were molesting people and the deacons that were fucking covering it up using RICO
that
laws. We tried.
That doesn't actually threaten the status quo.
You're right.
Yeah.
Bada boom. It's almost like we only apply laws to people that threaten the status quo, and we just don't use them when they don't.
And so, like, when you ask, like, people, like, that's because that's, like, the first thing that people will think of. Like, well, gosh, we can't be all extreme like that, because otherwise the Gestapo is going to come for us in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
Literally. And it will happen. So it's like, what can we do? And like, my only answer has been to try and figure out, like, okay, how do I produce enough food for myself and my family? Because how do I walk the walk?
Right.
And show others that it is possible, because there has to be a certain level of deindustrialization that has to happen. And the thing that people are scared about is that one day Kroger will be unstocked.
Yeah.
One day there won't be a grocery store.
And that is
there
coming.
Won't be that McDonald's. There won't
that
be.
Really hit people in March when Corona started.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
You're right.
The toilet
first
paper.
Saturday after everything hit the fan. I remember it hit the fan on a Tuesday or a Wednesday.
I remember that. Yep.
So that Saturday, we weren't married yet, but my wife and I were getting ready to go to Kroger, and we're just like terrified to go in and see what's going to happen. Like, oh fuck! Like,
is there going to be anything left?
Is there anything left? How crazy are people going to be? Is it going to be like one of those crazy ass Black Friday Walmart things?
Mm-hmm.
are we going to get infected?
Yeah. Well, like, none of us knew back then that masks helped.
Yeah.
Right.
You know?
And that was a big thing, too. Like, people will talk about, like, you couldn't have, like, my dad was like, I don't know, I'm not even going to get into that, but his big thing has always been, why don't they just wait until they know something to create action instead of just fucking everything over and closing all these businesses? It's like, well, by and large, a lot of people didn't know, that scientists didn't know yet, and, you know, if we knew right off the bat, like, hey, everybody just play cool, do the same thing you've been doing, just avoid so huge social gatherings and just wear a mask everywhere you go.
Right.
Think how much different this would have gone.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know. And it's like, you shouldn't have to have all the pieces before you need people to take action if it's going to be action for the betterment. But, like, when you, there is, like, again, there is, like, he's approaching the point in there.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
If you're, as a state, not prepared on an, you know, infrastructure level to deal with what's going on, then inducing panic is counterproductive.
Yeah,
you know, and I Ron talks about that all the fucking time.
Yeah, and it's like,
they should have just, you know, it's like we kind of like so frequently, and I feel like this is a perfect full circle to what we've been talking about as far as capitalist solutions for climate change. Capitalist governments, because they acknowledge that capitalism really needs to be propped up to work by them, they can't go too far into social democracy or, like, socialism, and they can't just let everyone starve. So what they always fucking do is they meet in the middle and make every possible solution worse.
Right. And that was, yeah, the kind of thing with the COVID thing that happened, where it was like, look, we either prioritize the economy, stay open, tell people to wear your mask, take precautions, and you take the deaths that come with it, or we do the full lockdown, you pay us to stay home, we squash this thing. But we chose to do some weird in-between thing that just ended up with both.
It was the market. It was the most logical market solution, Ron.
Yeah.
It was the only way we could do it.
Also, now Donald Trump is trying to say that, like, I just didn't want to cause panic, folks. Like,
right. And, like, why wouldn't his supporters buy that?
Right.
Again, that's always the thing with, like, reactionaries. They're so good at telling, like, the most perfect half-truth. They get half of it absolutely right, but then just lie through the teeth on the other half.
Yeah.
Well, and disasters are good for large capitalist conglomerates, right?
Yeah.
Because they are in a market, the biggest fish is always going to be the best able to weather the storm.
Yeah.
Right? And so the COVID shutdown thing is going to be just like fucking the real estate market in Louisiana after Katrina hit, right? You're going to see a massive conglomerate come in and buy up what were a lot of small holdings and a lot of small properties, small businesses,
yep.
And all of that gets wiped out. The only people with money to rebuild are the big conglomerates.
Also, say what you will, but, like, disasters are a lot. They're profitable.
Incredibly
profitable. Look at, like, you know, people like Tide, who are like, well, Tide cleaners went down to clean up these poor baby ducks at the fucking oil spill site.
Yeah, the oil spill that, like, those same markets that P&G plays ball with all day, every day, fucking, you know, enabled.
I hate to bring South Park up again, but it's the whole, like, we're sorry. When, like, the BP oil spill happened.
Yeah. We're so sorry.
We teamed up with another company that's doing genocide abroad to help you personally. or we teamed up with another company that's using their money and influence to make your life worse every day. And we did the one thing when we went too far into the draconian bullshit. Like, It's horrible, and it's one of those things we're going to have to continue to grapple with as, I mean, really, capitalists are the biggest opportunists in the world, and I mean, it's so funny to me that, like, you know, you have, like, small business owners and, like, the smaller bourgeoisie that, you know, defend the system really virulently, you know, because they kind of are the ones on the ground doing it, being the small capitalists, and now that their holdings and material wealth and power has been totally threatened by this pandemic, big capitalists went in immediately and just kicked the floor out from under them, you know, kicked their feet out from under them. And that there's going to be generations and generations of effects from that, whether we want to admit it or not.
Yeah, I think you're going to see another large mortgage default wave happen. That is mostly landlords that took out mortgages for their second and third, you know, investment properties that are going
to
default on those mortgages.
And I really hate working with those people. because I would love, my favorite thing in the world is helping out a first-time home buyer buy their new home.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't like helping the parasites that are out here trying to exploit a housing
shortage. Right. Right. Not only that, is that these people are, like, very well educated. You know, they might do their shopping, but at the end of the day, like, I'm trying to, you know, further advance myself for my own, you know, benefit. I don't want to have to pay off, and I don't want to have to pay 10 times more rent to stay somewhere when I can just, you know, build my own personal life for me and my family. I love that, and I respect that. That's sure. Great. On the other hand, you have these parasites who are constantly looking to do the same thing, but they're instead looking to buy, you know, like one person, you know, who's buying like their neighbor's house to help, you know, their son move in and pay rent.
Yeah, that's one thing. Yeah, yeah, okay.
It's still technically an investment property. Okay.
Yeah, whatever. But I mean, it's like, a nuanced thing. They're not doing it to turn a profit. Right. They're doing it to ensure some material wealth for their future generation, which is, you know, something everyone's wanted forever, not just people who, not just bourgeoisie.
Yeah, you know? And then you have these other people that own, like, you know, a dozen plus investment properties, a whole bunch of different houses, and, you know, they don't give a fuck.
And that system is going to get more and more indefensible as, like, the physical amount of land we have and the physical amount of shelter we have becomes more and more scarce.
Yeah.
And those people, and, like, you know, it's easy to sit here now and say not every landlord is a bloodsucker or an evil person. Like, they're people that are making their living like any... That's the argument people make. And, like, yeah, I don't think every single landlord is, like, personally a horrible, evil person. You do. Oh,
Jack does. I do think that.
Oh, to be clear.
Fuck landlords.
Jack does think. No. But it wouldn't matter if they were or weren't, I guess would be my... Maybe they all are. I don't know. But it wouldn't matter if they were or weren't. At the end of the day, they are people that are taking advantage of a shortage of a necessary good to profit, and those people are not going to magically stop doing that because it suddenly becomes deeply unethical to do so.
No. It has to become illegal, and there have to be very severe consequences for holding housing hostage in an environment where housing can be destroyed at the drop of a hat by a freak storm. Like, I live in Dayton, right? And I and when the tornadoes came through, the housing shortage that was created just from one night of tornadoes that took out, I mean, a good chunk of the city, but, like, not, you know, it's not like it destroyed everybody's
house. Yeah, it wasn't
house.
Katrina.
It's like,
no.
It wasn't Katrina, right. Like, it wasn't even anything like that. And just the effects on the homeless population and on the number of people who are just in absolute desperation just from that. Like, there was a neighborhood called the Old North where... For the large, like a large part of people owned these houses because they were like old, like post-war boom houses that people had paid off, and that was a lot of elderly folks living in them now. Yeah. And a lot of them didn't have insurance, right? Because insurance is expensive and they're on fixed incomes.
And they don't have to, because if people have owned the same house for decades, they weren't required to have to pay insurance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you weren't required to insure your house. Yeah.
Well, and once you own it, you're not. Yeah. Required to insure. Yeah. You should, but like you're not required
to
insure.
Yeah, you're not
to
required
it. If you, the only reason you're required to is because the bank technically owns it.
Right.
You know, but like it, and but a natural disaster like that comes through and just wipes them out.
Right.
And it's going to keep happening. I mean, you saw in Iowa, you know, the billions and billions of dollars of damage that just happened with that, it was called a Derrico.
Oh, yeah.
That
freak, we had one.
The land-based hurricane.
In 2009.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it knocked over the fucking Kings Island sign.
Yeah,
yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it sure did.
But like, you're gonna. That's as those weather events stop being every 10 years and they become every 2 to 3 years.
Yeah,
you know, and housing, like you said, just literally they can't rebuild houses profitably enough and fast enough.
Yeah, and fast enough. Yeah. Right, and that's the thing. Like, at the end of the day, like, you know, I've talked to some of my libertarian friends and stuff, and their solutions to this are we just need to build a bunch of tiny, efficient housing, and I say, great. I agree. You know, more dense, smaller, like good, you know, sustainable housing is a great idea. Who's going to build it? Where are we going to build it? Where are we going to get the materials to build it? And can capitalism actually do that? And I straight up had a friend the other day when I like confronted him that he said, I don't know. I don't have an answer to that.
And that's
I'm like,
the
cool,
thing,
dude. Then, like, why? Then, what is your ideology based on if you don't have an answer? Like,
and even looking at a country like China, that in response to the COVID thing, like they built like 20 fucking hospitals in the span of like 3 months.
Yeah,
you know, because they have an economy that is structured so that they can take resources from one place and immediately shift them over here. The Chinese government can direct state-owned companies and say, "Go build 20 fucking hospitals now," and people go and do it. Right. Versus if you have to wait on somebody to make a profit at every single step of the way that you do in a capitalist state like America, like, it just never gets done.
Right. And it's like, certainly China is not like a perfect, you know, example of a planned economy.
But they can't, it's...
But like the fact that even with like, even though they're still clearly like state kind of capitalist, the fact that even that much of a shift from like where we're at to there can like be that much more effective should show you that like, what we're doing is like so destructive and so not going to work in the long term.
Yeah. But it is going to make people incredibly rich. As you've seen, the richest 0.01% have gained what? Like $400 billion since this whole thing kicked off in personal wealth. Like, disasters are good for the people at the top.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
So any closing thoughts, y'all? I guess we can go around here if anybody's got any last opinions on this. We're getting to about 50 minutes here, so.
I'm just excited for in the nearby future where we all start just spraying our crops with Brondo. Personally, that's what I'm looking forward
Brondo
to.
Brondo has what plants crave.
Electrolytes.
Like out of the toilet? Man, you know, I do want to bring up that point really quick because that is definitely something that like I just was saying last night. I rewatched Idiocracy for the first time in a year.
And I watched it for the first time.
For the first time ever. And, you know, people take away from that movie that like poor people are dumb. They kind of forget the part of that movie where a private company bought the government because it said their product was dangerous, or the part where officers of the law drive literal killdozers, or any of those other parts of the movie, you know, where capitalism is what made people this way.
Right, right. And capitalism is kind of the reason they just keep throwing their trash out the window and they don't know what to do with it. And I mean, like, it's basically made them not think because they don't have to make a choice.
Right. Now, of course, the one thing that movie doesn't broach, because it's by no means a perfectly political movie, is even at the beginning when they're setting up the whole idea that, like, smart people don't reproduce at the same rate, they don't explain why poor people produce at a larger rate.
Right.
They don't explain the lack of contraception, the lack of education, the, you know, the lack of access to things that, or simply, like, just, yeah, our society is built to, like you say, continue to perpetuate the working class so that we can exploit them. So, yeah. Yeah, did you have anything else to that point, Liz? I'm sorry. That was a really good one.
No, I... Yeah.
Prondo, baby.
Yeah.
John?
I think we've had a lot of different intersections with different tie-ins between you have capitalism on one hand and climate change, and they are very much two different topics that are very entangled but ultimately start at the same place.
Yeah. Definitely.
You got a two-headed snake and it keeps twisting its heads around, but it starts forking off from the same place.
Yep. Absolutely. Jack?
I think that the most important thing to understand about climate change over the course of the next 10 years especially is going to be that the store shelves are not going to be empty, but people's pantries are. Because food is just going to continue to get more expensive as crops fail. I don't think that you're going to see crop failures on a level that would cause the store shelves to be completely empty. Sure. The way that people think about, like, oh, when you say the word famine, right? Famine in the United States is not going to look like famine in sub-Saharan Africa, where there is no food. There's going to be food. It's just going to be guarded by armed guards and an increasingly militarized police state and sold for prices that people cannot afford with their wages.
Sure.
Because that is going to keep people desperate and showing up to work even when the sky is literally blood red.
Hell yeah.
You know, we worry a lot about global warming and its effects and everything, but I can just point this out. A wise man once said, I got one word for you. Mars, bitches.
Mars.
M-A-R-S.
Going to Mars, baby.
Yes. Oh, take me there, Daddy Elon.
Okay, but what about the ancient Martian civilization that wiped itself out? Why would we go repopulate the planet that's killed itself?
That sounds like their problem.
If we have the terraforming technology to alter the chemical makeup of the atmosphere, why would we not just apply that to Earth?
I would once again like to thank the people who listen for making us Mars' number one podcast.
Mars. Dude, remember when Newt Gingrich wanted to put a fucking moon colony
I was just thinking about that the other day.
Come on, man. Let's colonize the moon. Screw this Well, stupid planet. Let's just go up there.
For what it's worth, this place is probably going to look like the moon in 100 years.
True.
So, hey. Mm-hmm.
Barren and full of dust.
Yeah, dude. And then Barron Trump will pop out of a wormhole. Well,
I thought
it
was Ben Shapiro's wife.
Ben Shapiro's wife and Barron will pop out of a wormhole. And I don't know. Maybe they'll save us at that point. Yeah, repopulate the moon. That'll
and
rock.
And cue the Doctor Who theme.
Oh, man. Well, that was... Man, that was a really uplifting episode, everybody. I hope that we made you feel good and fuzzy about this.
You know
one.
What, Tim? I can thoroughly say you have sapped all the joy out of me. I started
I was doing that long before this fucking podcast, man. We've been together 7 years.
I would encourage everybody listening to plant a garden. Next spring, if you can, if you have even a small little plot of land, learn how to grow a couple of vegetables and save a couple seeds, because that could literally save you from starvation within the next 10 years.
Hell yeah, man. Rock and roll. Number one gardening podcast in all of Ohio.
Oh, yeah.
I want to thank Liz again for coming on. This has been this is a good conversation. I want to thank my co-host Jack and John, as always. I want to thank Mr. Ron on the ones and twos over there. And thank you all very much for listening. We look forward to talking to you again soon. And on my honor, I will do my best to smash capitalism. See you next time. Bye.